You, Kevin. I'm Todd, Uncle Odd, if you will. You know, the okay. show's called Fakeology with Uncle Odd and Ab the Fakeologist, which is basically we like interviewing tip of the spear researchers like yourself, or just people who are over the target when it comes to just this upside down world and everything that's going on. And so, Ab, who lives in Canada, I'm going to let him take over because he is, he sent me an email just saying, we have to get this guy on. And so, I think he reached out to you, responded. So thank you very much for giving us some of your time.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. My name is, Tim. That's my Christian name. And I also name myself Fakeologist or Avarado. Avarado is, I think you might know because you have a sort of a legalistic bent to you. Avarado, I believe, means angry man in the court system. So I chose that to basically illustrate my real sort of anger towards the system when I woke up in 2012 to 9/11. Mm-hmm. I live in Toronto, and I've been studying media fakery since 2012, which is when I basically woke up to how the world works, because I didn't realize that everything happened for a reason and there were people closer to the top managing us. And I just was oblivious, like I think most people back in the history of time. And I think now, of course, we're going through probably the greatest transition of our lifetimes. And it's making 9/11 look like a puny little sideshow. And boy, oh boy. So now that we're fully awake, I've been fully awake, I think, in my own mind since 2012. And basically, I've been talking about 9/11 for quite a few years because I figured if people could understand how that worked, what the the language was, the language of psyops, deception, I figured when the next thing came along, we'd be pretty prepared, pretty well prepared. But of course, I didn't know what was coming along. No idea, but I knew they had to be working on something. So when this thing came along early on in the year, I thought, well, this either could be a few weeks, and that it soon became clear this was not going away. So that's why I started doing a lot of research every day, and I stumbled upon you, and I'm going to really stress myself out trying to remember how I found you, because now there is so much content from creators, so many recommendations, so many paths follow, so many recommendations. I can't quite remember right this second how I stumbled upon your work. But
it's actually been around for, I've been doing work like this for 25 years or more. I mean, it began about the whole residential school genocide, which I really forced to the surface. And many of those same issues are happening today. I mean, the example I like to use is mandatory vaccinations being the case for Indians for 140 years. You can't refuse medical treatment if you live on a reservation in North America. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like what the crimes they try on others, if they work, they do on all of us, right?
Yeah. And I have to admit, I haven't finished watching Unrepentant, but I was aware of the residential schools just on the surface, the surface story. I did not dig deep into that one. It wasn't exactly a story that was a happy story, so it didn't really attract me. I have to admit, I'm kind of one of those people consuming the mainstream news about natives, and I have mixed emotions about how they were treated. Now, I don't, of course, I'm not happy about any ill treatment of anyone, but it just seems like the world is built on conquering, so they're conquered, and I didn't know what else, what could Canada give to them. But I wasn't really fully aware until I started listening to your stuff on just how vicious people were, I guess the religious class that managed these schools, with the government's endorsement. back in the 40s and 50s, because that really still seems like ancient history to me. But wow, just what I know about you from what I've just listened to you and watched some of your movies and stuff, you really stuck your neck out on the line. And why you did it, other than the fact that you just appear to be a good-hearted person, which doesn't seem to be enough motivation for most people, it's just incredible what you've done and achieved and what you've lost, what you've sacrificed. It's incredible.
Well, I didn't set out to do it, of course. I mean, when we're ignorant and naive, it can help us, because if we were really aware of stuff, we wouldn't go into certain areas and this stuff would never be exposed, right? Mm-hmm. But I think it's also because I had so much taken away in my life, I didn't have anything left to lose. Mm. And I was determined not to let these liars and murderers keep winning. So I guess it was a moral issue for me. Mm-hmm. But also my own life depended on it. You know, you can do something out of a good intention and something because your life depends on it. And you have to fight, right? Like a lot of the people I know and work with, you just have to fight back because they don't stop. They keep coming after you, like they're coming after all of us now, right?
Yeah, and people don't even realize that's happening. People like myself, Todd, we study media fakery, and Todd has really taken on the coronavirus hoax full time, a lot, well, more than he was probably researching 9/11, because it's just so in your face. It's just so, everyone is involved now. Before, you could ignore 9/11, you could ignore the residential schools, you could ignore how the world worked, but now it's in everyone's face. It's everybody's business. And I said in March to just the people around me that were used to me just spouting off about the things they could ignore, I said, now's the time where everyone has to make a choice. Right. Every single person in this world has to make a choice. What side are you on? Because this is not going away where you could ignore things.
That's right. That's the motivation behind us forming these assemblies, because mm-hmm. it's one thing to document the problem and talk about it, but it's then the next step is, well, what are we going to actually do? And we find that that stymies so many people, because we've been raised in a dependency kind of culture where people aren't used to thinking or acting for themselves. So it's new territory for a lot of people, but they stick with it because they know so much is at stake, right?
Can you for guys like me who isn't as educated in things Canada, when you talk about forming these new assemblies, and the little bit that I know is that you've pulled something off that is pretty miraculous to me, which is you basically beat back Canada. I mean, you usurped them. I'm going to destroy it. I'm going to hand it back to you. Your most recent in the news, tell me what you just did.
Well, this came out of two assemblies on Vancouver Island that were formed. And I'm an advisor to the whole national movement, so I was working with all of these assemblies. Basically, what they did was pass a local bylaw that said three things. The COVID restrictions, whether it's distancing, masking, the mandatory vaccinations, any of that, is unlawful because it doesn't come from any accountable authority. Courts and parliament are closed. It's unwarranted because of the level of death and suffering from this that's not warranted. And it's extremely unhealthy. And on those grounds, it's illegal what they're doing. First mm-hmm. step. Second, people are then free to ignore it. And in fact, are encouraged to actively disobey the regulations
Good.
Without fear of consequence, because we're just standing on our protecting our rights, and that supersedes any statute. And finally, anyone who tries to impose those regulations can go to court, common law courts that we set up, and can be fined and imprisoned for doing this. So we're really turning the system back on them.
It's amazing.
Turning the tables. Now, this has swept like wildfire across the country, and we now have, and this is kind of a sneak preview, on Tuesday, there's a national council of these common law assemblies, and they passed a law covering all of Canada now, saying the same thing. This applies everywhere now, everywhere in Canada. And, you know, it's an idea that's new for Canadians, that the people can govern the government, right, and can turn the tables. But it's an old idea in America. It's really what you founded on. The idea of a republic is when people govern themselves, and they can opt out at any point. you know, like Tom Jefferson said, every 20 years you need a new revolution, right? Every generation, right?
Well, speaking of America, I live in Tampa, Florida, and when I hear this, you know, I get really super excited, and then I get a little bit depressed thinking, well, they're in Canada. They haven't figured out I'm in America. Now, you referenced America, but is there, do you know, is there any movements in America that are doing something similar, or is this just, you know, you guys are the tip of the spear up there and we need to take notes?
Well, no, there isn't anything like this, although there's a vast awareness of common law in America. I mean, it's right in your constitution that everyone has a constitutional right to a common law jury trial, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's easy when you think you've got it guaranteed. You can sit on your laurels and not worry about this stuff. But in a situation like Canada, which has got such a horrible history, it's, you know, one man runs the government called the Governor General, the Queen's representative. He can dismiss the government at any point. Mm-hmm. We've been raised in this colonial medieval system. And so that naturally the reaction against it is that much harder. You know, whereas in America, maybe people just assume they've got it and they don't have to worry about it. But that isn't true. You know, the same sickness is really everywhere mm-hmm. in the world now, as we see, right?
Well, Americans yeah. have it, but it's a muscle they haven't exercised, so they don't right. even know it's right. there. And it's right. just falling off their bones right now because
right.
everyone's been so complacent and so just go and with the flow. They don't know, they don't know what they have. And I'm afraid that with this COVID's revolution, they'll vote it away from themselves without even knowing in the name of this, magic virus. But could I just go back a bit? I want for our audience to know who Kevin is because not everyone has followed his work. And I think your greatest achievement is bringing light to the residential schools. So could you give us the Reader's Digest version sure. of yep. start to present?
Well, it was, you know, I've lived my life very much as in community service, political activism, whatever you call it. But in 1990, I was ordained as a United Church minister. That's like a Presbyterian Methodist kind of church in Canada. And it's a fairly major church here. I got one of my early postings was I got sent out to I applied at Port Alberni, which is a lumber town on the west coast of Canada on Vancouver Island. And I deliberately went there because it was a heavily Aboriginal area. And I was always interested. I am partly native myself, Métis, which is mixed blood English Indian from around Winnipeg, central Canada. So mm-hmm. I was always kind of drawn to know my hidden history that nobody in our family wanted to talk about, right? And I began to work right away with the Aboriginal people there. First native home I ever visited, they said, my best friend was killed in that school run by your church, and he's buried in the hill out back.
Oh, what a... That's amazing.
I asked in the churches, and he told me right away. And none of the whites want us because they all know about it. And it was kind of like this hidden reality living alongside everyday, you know, my everyday reality. Every native person I then invited into church had a similar story. Now, the white people in the church loved the fact that I was building the congregation, so they kind of turned a blind eye right away. But we clinched it. After 2.5 years, I found out that there'd been a whole history of the United and the Catholic and the Anglican churches all not only killing children in these schools and trafficking them, which was still going on, I discovered, but grabbing land and selling it off for a lot of money to big corporations. And I surfaced one of those accounts, and I got thrown right out quickly without cause, without notice, anything. And immediately, you know, the defrocking procedure started immediately because I was sitting on this time bomb of you know, residential schools, land theft, the whole bit. Everything we know is genocide, right? They went to my wife. We had two daughters, and there was quite a little at the time. They said to her, if you help us, we'll make sure you get the kids. He's never going to be able to work again. So that happened. I was blacklisted, lost my family, everything. But that brought me closer to Native people. They trusted me more. And over the years that followed, we held tribunals, protests. We eventually forced the Canadian government to admit to some of these things in 2008. They had kind of a false, fake apology, right? As if that solved anything. They covered up a lot of stuff, destroyed grave sites. But we have documented all in our book, murderbydecree.com. And all of that evidence research over 25 years is there. But the interesting thing is, after they shut me out in Canada and pretty much swabbed my name out of the media in 2008, I get invited over to Europe and by similar groups in Ireland and other places that were, you know, survivors of Catholic Church crimes. And we set up a tribunal there, the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State. And that eventually convened a common law court that found Pope Benedict, Queen Elizabeth, and others guilty of genocide. We helped force his resignation and that of three top cardinals. It really started this whole wave of awareness of
you guys were sort of behind Pope Benedict's abdication or withdrawal.
I watched the movie
The Two Popes. They didn't mention you.
Okay. The Two Popes was put out as a spin operation to make these two guys look like, you know, really nice.
Oh, I know. It was a whitewash. You know, it was a whitewash, yeah, totally whitewash. No doubt. I actually ended up liking the evil looking one.
Yeah, you're meant to. But I'll tell you how it happened in a nutshell was we had a lot of evidence showing that Pope Benedict Joseph Ratzinger had personally sent out letters to all the bishops saying cover up not only child rape, but trafficking
God.
And even the death of children. We gave that to the Spanish government. Their diplomatic ambassador to the Vatican notified Ratzinger that he might face arrest if he came to Spain.
Whoa.
2 weeks later, he resigns.
Oh, my. That is a story that never came out. I never heard that.
He got buried by a spin. The Vatican put out a spin media account
God.
Right away.
Isn't that something?
And three other cardinals, the Secretary of State, Tarcisio Bertone, Irish Cardinal, all these guys who were directly implicated in that ring he's talking about, they all resign. And yet, they're just doing that because, no, I mean, you don't resign from those positions unless, you know, it's serious stuff. So, you know.
Unless there's fire.
That's
amazing.
Is stunning. Well, now, this is the $64,000 question, although with inflation, it's probably a lot more. How you went against the church. You went against big industry. You went up against the biggest and oldest corporation in the world, the Vatican. Mm-hmm. How are you still breathing?
People always ask me that.
God.
Okay, I wouldn't be if I was native. I'd be long dead.
Oh, I know. You said that. That's terrible.
Right. Now, they did everything short of killing me, don't forget. If you destroy somebody's public good name, they, you know, and their family and their livelihood, reputation. Sure. It's called, a member of U.S. Supreme Court decision said a while ago, Oliver Wendell Holmes actually once said that if you destroy a man's good name, he suffers a social death, which is worse than physical death.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely what they try to impose on me. And it was a real struggle to keep going, but I had all this evidence and all these eyewitnesses that kept coming forward proving it. And it proves, I think, I like telling my story because it proves that if one person was able to do this, anybody can do this. You just have to be stubborn and stand on the truth. And keep pushing. They can't kill you most of the time if you're white and professional like me because it creates too much of a stink and it creates more, you know, it creates a martyr and they don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
They want to just discredit the name and they've done a big job on the internet smearing me, but a
smear
campaign doesn't work over long. It works in the short term.
Yeah.
But over the long run, it brings more attention to you because they say, well, how's this guy still alive after 20 years? And even the government of Canada has admitted genocide now. So he was proven right. But,
right.
You know, it's like, it's a Lee Harvey Oswald dilemma, right? I mean, everyone knows that one guy couldn't have done it, but that's still the official line. Well,
sure.
Same deal.
Yeah, you're a bit of a living legend, a bit of a living martyr, really.
Yeah, it was amazing when we had the extra hour, thank you for hanging with us on that. I went and I'm like, cool. I can go do a little research and be a little smarter on the call. And I can tell you people either love you or they hate you. And so when you talk about the smear or whatever, you know, I read it and was super eager to speak with you because I am so ignorant to, if I stopped right there, Ab would probably be happy, but, I'm
but
so
you notice those smears are all hearsay and innuendo. Like they say this about him. In a court of law, that's hearsay is not permissible. So
right.
The worst thing I read about you, and I'll just tell you, I didn't dive deep into it because you can get overwhelmed with just the negative when obviously if everything you've done for good is true, then it certainly outweighs. The worst thing I heard is that you like younger women And being an older man, I understand the preference because, you know, you're a heterosexual, most likely, and I don't really see a big problem in that. So, and you're single or you're divorced, so I don't think you have any, you don't have any ties, so I don't really see a problem. If that's the worst you are, then I think that's okay. And yeah, I guess that's a sexist comment to make, I guess, or politically incorrect in 2020. But from one heterosexual male to the other, I still think that's probably what most guys our age would do. I'm a little younger than you, but
tends to be right, you know. But no, I mean it's so funny because I've never been sued in 25 years. Now that tells you something right there. If I was making up this stuff, they would have had me in court with a gag order quicker than you can imagine. Mm-hmm. A libel suit. They never contradict any of the evidence. They just attack me personally. And I remember when I was in law school, because I did that few years of law before I entered the ministry. They said in legal process class, they say, when you're in court, if the evidence is on your side, you just argue the evidence. But if the evidence is against you, you attack the credibility of the witness.
Uh-huh.
And you just focus. They're called ad hominem attacks.
Right.
You focus on the man, not the evidence, and make me the issue. And that's like in any smear campaign, the FBI call it bad jacketing. You controversialize the guy.
Uh-huh.
You say you're the issue, not all of this undeniable evidence.
Uh-huh.
So it's the old tactic of, you know, that it's the oldest game in the world.
Yeah.
But people who don't know better fall for it because they're predisposed to thinking bad of a white guy, first of all. I mean, you know, like a white minister, oh boy, right? I think I wouldn't have that problem if I was native or white, or a woman, but that I'd be dead as well if I was native. So
bonus. Bonus white maleness.
Yeah, so can you talk a little bit about your movie? It's a 3-hour epic called Unrepentant, because I haven't heard of the movie until I looked at your website. So what's happened with that? How did you make it? Obviously, it's not widely released because I've never heard of it. I'm not a big movie person, but I do love documentaries. So it's never been highlighted in my reel.
Well, it was the most viewed movie for a while on the internet when it was released early in 2007.
Okay.
But don't forget, by 2008, there was a huge swabbing out from the internet of anything related to me, of complete censorship. So that memory's been put down the memory hole, right? I mean, but it was done by a few of us here on Vancouver Island, just using the evidence we had, the eyewitnesses, along with the documentation, something like, we had this document showing that half the children were dying every year because in these Indian schools, and this is a report from one of their own doctors, Dr. Peter Bryce. He said they're taking the healthy Indian girls and boys, putting them in with the sick, the ones dying of TB and smallpox, and never treating them. Just let them die en masse. And that happened decade after decade. It wasn't just one time in one school. They were all doing it over over 100 years. And that's why they killed off so many. So no one in Canada has ever answered that question. You know, if it was just a mistake, how come so many died over so long unless it was intentional? They don't talk about those issues, right? We documented all that in Unrepentant, got out over the internet. It had like 100,000 hits in the first couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It forced the issue because members of parliament saw it, got up and started asking questions about the missing children. We identified 28 mass grave sites. We even did a dig where we uncovered bones of children. But again, the media and the churches and the government totally censored all of that out, so you don't know about it now.
And what year was all this neglect, this violent discipline going on? What were the years? When did it end?
Officially, the first school was open in 1889. The last one closed in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
107 years officially. But a lot of it was then farmed out. This stuff still goes on.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah, the medical experimentation, drug testing, all of that.
In 2020?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, one of the things I do now is I document a lot of the human trafficking that goes on all over the West Coast. Chinese have a big hand in that.
Human trafficking is a word that came in with the word sexual assault. what does it mean? Because trafficking to me is bumper to bumper in Toronto going to
right.
work.
Right, it's a deliberately soft word.
Yeah.
For slave trade. It's really slave trade. Arms, drugs, human beings are the chief commodities, you know, trade. And on the West Coast especially, the whole Pacific Rim, one of the things early on I found in the research, and this is why we got censored out very quickly, we did our first tribunal in the summer of 1998 in Vancouver, had international observers the whole bit, and eyewitnesses there described not only children being regularly trafficked off the reservations and that by their own chiefs, but a whole organ trafficking network. The first, there were continually bodies showing up along what's called the Highway of Tears in northern British Columbia. Mm-hmm. And Human Rights Watch in New York put out a report about this, saying the Mounties, RCMP, were directly involved in making these women go missing and die. The early bodies that were found were missing organs. And that was
news
reports. We know that the...
What organs? China, kidneys,
you know,
and livers?
In China, where they do this routinely to Falun Gong and other people in their prisons, the general responsible for those prisons sits on the board of directors of the liquid natural gas companies that are operating in BC. And if you trace the line of where these LNG operations are, it's right where a lot of the people go missing. So they're terrorizing people off the land. They're using them for their organs, the whole bit. It's being documented. People know this on the ground, but there's a total censorship of this in all the Canadian media and everything, right? So it's how the genocide continues. I mean, it's nothing new for Indians, but why would it stop?
Kevin, let me ask you this.
Wow.
When you talk about the media suppressing this, you know, we all refer to and speak in they speak, which is they do this. You know, whether it's the powers that be. The powers that be in any country, you know, control the press. And so my question to you, because you will probably know, who are they? Who are they in Canada? Who are they in this world who are running the show that are turning it upside down right now?
Well, people always want an easy answer for that, like there's a few culprits. And the they is all of us, of course, because we're all colluding in a system. We turn another way, you know. Sin of omission and commission. It's how these things carry on. But specifically, I don't believe there's a uniform global elite that's pulling all the strings. When you look at any company or, you know, in the business world, how it operates, people are at each other's throats all the time. You don't find unanimity among people in power. There's always factions. There's always power struggles going on in these systems. And that's one of the ways we won in exposing the crimes of the Vatican, because there was a faction around the present guy, Bergoglio, who wanted Ratzinger out, and some of their people were feeding us information to help get rid of Ratzinger, right? But I mean, the present guy is equally guilty. He was involved in child trafficking in Argentina when he was friends with the military junta there, Pope Francis, Smiley Frank, you know. So I mean, no, I don't believe there's a uniform elite, but I mean, there's definitely actors. And in one of the books I wrote, the Whistleblower Manual, it says evil always has a name and an address. They just don't want you knocking on their door. It's it's not a vague evil. It's definite actors. And we named them. You can see some of the perpetrators when you go to murderbydecree.com. We list in our common law court cases the people, the individuals we charge with genocide, ongoing genocide. The present Prime Minister Justin Trudeau signed a law which makes him personally complicit in these crimes. He allowed the Chinese to station their troops on Canadian soil to protect investment. It's called the Foreign Investment Protection.
That's happening now?
Yes, it was passed when one of the first things he did in office.
So there are Chinese troops in Canada right now?
I have talked to people, a reporter, Merv Ritchie, who has observed their maneuvers, and he knows for a fact from friends in the RCMP that yes, they are openly operating. That the head of the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, Richard Fadden, made a comment 10 years ago where he said the British Columbia government is being systematically infiltrated by the Chinese government, and especially the resource ministries, you know, logging, minerals, and that. And it's being run directly now from Beijing, you know.
Wow.
Which doesn't make it's not surprising when you think of it. I mean, that's what they need, the resources, and they're going to get them. But, you know, that's part of what we're talking about. I mean, it's like in any community, if you dig far enough, you know what the crime is, you know who the criminals are, but, when Al Capone is in power, what are you going to do when you live in Chicago, right?
Right. Well, this non-demic, though, seems to be pretty worldwide orchestrated. And so to me, that's just led me down the path, whether it's, you know, up through Fauci, through the WHO, through the World Economic Federation, to, you know, all the usual suspects. It just seems entirely orchestrated, like they planned it for a long
well,
time.
Well, it's a symphony that's singing away right now. So it seems like they must have had a meeting every Friday at certain locations, and they've just executed a plan. So why don't we, I guess now we're transitioning into the coronavirus, psyop. So why, Kevin, when this started coming along, I guess the first stories might have started dripping out of China in December, January. What was your thought? What did you think was coming along? What did you think this was going to turn into? Did you think we would?
Yeah.
Yeah. What were your thoughts? Because you obviously were soaking in it for 20 years. So you.
Well, that's why it didn't surprise me much. I mean, I said, okay, now it's happened to all of us. We're all on the Indian reservation now.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's like mandatory vaccinations under the Indian Act since 1874 in Canada. If you live on reservation, you can't refuse medical treatment. Whenever they want to, Health Canada, which is now the agency telling everyone to quarantine, whenever they wanted to test a new drug, they'd go on the reservation and just shove it in the arm of an Indian baby, and they couldn't refuse or they'd go to jail. So that's been the fact. It's been happening to them for a long time. Distancing, all, you know, arbitrary measures, no human rights, all of that is the regime in the native world. You say you even have to have a pass to get off the reservation, and you go to jail if you didn't have a pass on you. So it's all of that goes on all the time. And you can kill an Indian with impunity if you're a cop and never go to jail because they're not citizens. They're wards of the state.
Wow.
So a ward of the state can't have any independent legal status like now, right? They're just taking what they did to Indians and applying it to all of us now. And so I said to people, not only by ignoring the genocide, we cut our own throat because we couldn't see what was coming, but we have to learn. And a lot of people I work with are native or connected to that world. They've developed ways of surviving under police state and that we need to learn from. And that's the hardest thing when you're forming these assemblies. People are still thinking the old terms. Oh, we'll just send a petition to somebody or we'll just have a protest or no, it doesn't work. You know,
right.
We're in a new society here, a corporatocracy. There's no accountability, right?
Mm-hmm. Time's up on the old ways.
Yeah.
And I'm obviously plugged into the system. I've been working my entire life, and I was even thinking, oh, wouldn't it be great for early retirement because I didn't take vacation. Well, I've been saving for all those days of travel and traveling the world and just, you know, maybe knocking down a gear. But all of a sudden I can see that that's probably not going to happen. And then all the people that spent their money every year and had a good time, I think, oh boy. Maybe you were smarter than me. Maybe saving and waiting for the future wasn't such a great idea. Although, so it's just.
Well, it also, you know, it's like when I lost my kids, like my whole world collapsed, and I was thankful for any moment with them, right? Mm-hmm. And you become thankful for every day, every breath you have. I mean, when you've come close to death a lot, which I have. There have been a lot of incidents where I've come close. And the point is that part of us does die. When you go through a lot of grief, there's a death that goes on. Mm. And yet there's something else at the other end if you're able to go through it. And I think it's true about this for all of us now. We can't give in to fear because this is a testing. This is a way for us to shed off what's false and to hold on to what's true. And that separation you need every now and then, right? It's like the, you know, slashing and burning. You got to burn away the gold sometimes to get to allow the new growth. And I'm viewing that this is an amazing opportunity. The awareness going on is phenomenal. We got to thank the system for creating a police state. It's activated and kind of mobilized far more people than we could, right?
Oh, the content creation is off the charts. I've met so many new voices. Obviously, Todd. I told Todd, you've got the gift of the gab, you better get out there and just start broadcasting. And now Todd sets up a studio and he's going gung-ho. And he's got a professional bent to him, so he can get some of the guests that I don't have time to chase down. So it's unleashed, like you said, incredible creativity. And we have the most incredible tool in the history of the world, the internet, where I can broadcast, you can broadcast, and now we're just competing with some of the big boys from 30 years ago that are having just as hard of a time attracting ears and eyes. So it's an amazing tool. It's obviously a double-edged sword, and it can cut really hard the other way. But on the other hand, we can still hold this tool and use it for as long as they let us.
Well, and also in terms of developing a new way of thinking, that it's really doesn't matter what they do anymore, because they're not really doing anything to us. People are doing it to themselves.
Yes,
complying. It's sort of learning to comply. All we have to say is start here and go mentally dissociate. No.
Right.
And then let that translate into your action. And we find the best way to do that is together. And that's the assemblies do that right away.
Oh, that's great.
We sign a charter. We say we've got each other's backs. It isn't just me going up against the system. And now we expand out. And that works.
Now, you know, is that process anything that you've formulated that you can share? Is that on the murderbydecree.com?
No, the work of the Commonwealth Assembly in Canada is under this umbrella of something called the Republic of Kanata. It was formed 5 years ago at Kanata. So republicofkanata.ca. You can see in there, some of the material of what we're talking about.
Is that Republic? I went to republicofkanata.com and it says it's
.ca. .ca.
What's that?
.ca. We have our own domain up here in Canada.
Oh, okay.
And where did you get Kanata from? Because Kanata is a suburb of Ottawa that most
Kanata
people are.
Kanata is where the word Canada comes from. It's originally an Iroquois word, meaning where the people sit as one around the council fire. And it was kind of the original notion of equality and difference, you know, that governed, well, the Six Nations and Native Nations, but also our early settler ancestors here, had a different vision than what came later, right? When it was imposed on the Crown and others just announced that nobody actually owned anything in Canada under 6 inches of soil, which is the depth of a plow.
Right.
You could farm land, but the Crown owns everything else, all the wealth.
And is that still true?
Yeah, under Crown law, but we've negated that. We said we have a new jurisdiction, a republic, and that's what these common law assemblies embody locally, right? That idea of a new...
Yeah.
Now, 58% of Canadians want a republic as of 4 years ago. They don't want any more ties with the British Crown. So we're just doing what happened in America and Ireland and India, like, you know, just toss out the British Crown, right? It's pretty simple.
Well, I wish it was simple. I just don't, I guess as a regular Canadian, which I consider myself, I've been paying taxes my whole life. I'm in the system. I guess I'm still benefiting from the system where I go to work and three neighbors sit at home and take my money through a circuitous route. I still believe in the system, but I just don't understand. I don't understand the idea of a sovereign man, of a natural law. There's many, many people like yourself that are coming at this from different angles. I have a few names of people that the beautiful Amanda Vollmer gave us information on. I don't know if you've heard of the Yummy Mummy, who has been in the media.
I've got her email. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So you know her. She's been researching this longer than I have. I've just been in the media fakery, but you guys have been doing all this sovereign stuff for a lot longer, and it always came across to me as just hocus pocus, sort of airy fairy. How can you just pass laws in a country that's already 100% owned, except for a few disputing natives? I just don't understand. I thought we're all conquered by the Queen and her minions. How can you just put a flag in the ground and says this is ours and we're making laws? I just don't get that.
Like, because it already is. We're living in a bubble fiction. There's such a thing as a crown, and it was actually abolished by Parliament in 1649 when Cromwell cut off the head of the king. They brought in a law of Parliament of the Commons that said monarchy is henceforth disestablished and illegal, and anyone who tries to reestablish it is committing a crime against the people. Mm-hmm. Now, then his son had a coup. He brought back the monarchy through a military coup, but it doesn't make it a lawful institution, right? It's a fiction without popular, going against what the people decided. So sovereign just means you're self-governing, that you're not subject to any law except that which you create yourself. And that's, again, an old idea in America. The people create the government. The people, through the jury system, run the courts. I mean, that's really the original model. And it's a new one for Canada.
Nice that were true.
But hasn't, okay.
Well, I know,
but
I know,
how do they get away with, okay, but okay, this is what I want to know. And I think I know, maybe I'm formulating the answer as you talk. How do they get away with it? Have they just made us all so stupid that we don't know our history and mm-hmm. they're abiding by the same laws. They're aware of it, but 99% of the rest of us are not aware of it. So if a critical mass starting with you, came on board and said, listen, because of what you just said about the King of England, everything you guys have done is illegal, would they just lay down and say, you're right, go ahead? No. Would it be that easy, or would would Canada's military start firing on me from across the street?
You know, I've gone up against these guys, and when we were occupying churches, the police would regularly show up. I'd go right over and talk to them. I'd say, are you aware of the crimes of these churches? Are you aware that you defending these churches and standing in the doorway, protecting their property, you're colluding in a crime? Are you sure you want to do that? Do you know the standing policy in the Catholic Church saying when children are raped, the police are not to be told? This is a criminal conspiracy. So I say to the cops, you know, you will be named as accessories in a crime if you stop our legal right to assemble here. Mm. They would back off. Always back off. They never would stop.
Is it just because, but you're a smart guy and you've got all this information in your head. What's an average guy?
They rely on people's ignorance and fear, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm ignorant and fearful. I'm a pussy. Yeah. I admit it.
Well, no, I mean, that's, a lot of people might be that, but don't forget, you don't need a lot of people to change society. You need a small, you know, minority that get their hands on the lever. How do we force an apology, the few dozen of us who are involved in this? Because we started occupying churches and affecting their money and their public image. The government knew they had to respond. Now even Trudeau is using the word genocide when we were the only ones using it, you know. It spreads. It's like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, if you set the terrain of battle, you win the battle ever before it's fought, no matter how big your opponent. Mm. You define the issue. You define the narrative. They have to respond to you. And that's worked. And it's going to work again with this in an even bigger way because there's more at stake now, right?
In other words, like, I'm really worried that the Canadian Army, if we have one, I'm sure we do somewhere. If they're told, listen, go to the Republic of Canada, wherever it is. I think you said it's in Parkview or Qualicum on the island.
It's all over.
So would they be able to say, go over there and I guess what could they break up? You don't have a capital. You're invisible. So I guess what I'm getting at is what I've learned in my study of media fakery and psyops and psychological operations is the only weapon they have is to really control our minds, convince people that something is true, something is real, and get enough people believing in it so the real danger is not them and their military, it's the people. The people are the weapons. So if we've weaponized everyone to think that if you don't wear a mask, you're going to kill grandma or grandma's going to kill you, the people are weaponized by psyops.
That's why I say to people, you don't have to worry about cops. You have to worry about the cop in your own head. Because that cop in your head polices you, censors you, stops you from doing what you know is right because of fear or somebody might hurt you. Well, you know what? I mean, we're all going to die. The question is, do you want a year in freedom where you're fighting against the system or 20 years in slavery? I would prefer the year trying to do something about it. You got to decide the terms on which you die in. And we're doing it for the next generations, right? You know, when you see the way children are being traumatized now by these stupid masks.
Oh, it's disgusting.
And the way we're messing up the future of our society by this, it's a crime.
Why can't more people get it? That's what drives me nuts. Yeah. To me, it's so freaking self-evident. I have had an issue, a physical impairment, to where I cannot wear a mask. So I've gone through, you know, a legal process, a medical process to be able to have a special lanyard that I wear that to where I don't have a mask. So I'm the only one out there who's breathing in Tampa, Florida, I swear to God. Yeah. And I look at everyone and I think, you know, why are so many of you not just taking that frickin' thing off? Why are you complying? It just seems to me that people's critical thought is at an all-time low.
They never had it.
And I think, you know, I was saying when I was a youth in the 70s, if anyone had tried to do this on us, oh my God, we would have laughed it out of the room.
Right.
We would have refused, and anyone wearing one, we would have ridiculed.
Yeah.
But now, you notice in the young generation do it so quickly because of the mind alteration that's in the technology and the iPads and everything, the subliminal programming, that all of that, it's more effectively done now electronically.
It's done directly. And that's what that's what I've said. The little smartphone, which I call a monolith that we all carry, the only reason why this is happening is the system can go directly to each individual and they can record the reaction immediately. So instead of me, like you said, in the 70s, you were with your group of friends. Instead of you getting most of your information through that tribe, that filter of the tribe, they can bypass the tribe and go directly to your brain. You're literally wired into the system with Wi-Fi.
Right.
And they can go direct. So I'll get the message from my monolith before I'll talk to my best friend.
Right.
And my best friend has got the message as well.
And that's why we set up these assemblies to reestablish human contact and relationships.
Okay.
We always the first thing is we say, leave your phones in the car. You know, just leave everything outside and we're going to reestablish this because that's the whole strategy, exactly what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they've been at this for many years. And in fact, a lot of the medical experimentation stuff that we unearthed, you know, where they would use native kids in experiments, all designed to get at how you control human brain to create the perfect robot, the perfect soldier. That was a lot of the thrust of the MKUltra experiments after the war and everything. It's all about that. And it's coming to fruition now. And we can reverse it, though, by our action, because there's part of us they cannot control. You know, one of the examples of this, when we start our meetings with music, right, and we joke around and everything, that's the part of the brain that they don't easily control. I've seen this as a minister. I go into old folks' homes to do services, right?
Mm-hmm.
Used to do a lot more. These folks who sit in there, they've had strokes. They can't speak, but they can sing.
They can sing
during the hymn sing time because it's an earlier part of the brain that's not from the speech center. And it's an area that is not. It's kind of like our heart consciousness. Right?
And you know what the best example of that was?
Right?
Kevin, you're old enough to remember 60 Minutes when it was pretty much the only decent. They had the guy on there who had the old mother, and this guy was deaf and a mute, but he could sing at the piano. They played him music, and then he could just play it. I think his name was, I can't quite remember right now, but it was one of my favorite 60 Minutes of all times. And just what you said, they could not explain. How can we play a song for this guy and then he just plays it on the piano?
Wow.
And he comes alive.
And
his name was Leslie, I think.
These technocrats who are officially, you know, who are running corporations and the government, that they think like technicians. They don't realize that consciousness is not based in the individual brain. There's a higher consciousness, right? And there's that high. People say, why are you still alive? I've got protection of a kind I don't even understand. I did a ceremony outside the Vatican in 2009, and it turned into an exorcism. I called out the spirit of this thing, and the next day a tornado hits the center of Rome. It was October 11th.
I heard that. I couldn't believe that.
And then Pope Benedict that week is exposed for the first time in the European media as in being involved in this crime. So you see, I was at the center of something there and it blew open. The first stage of an exorcism is you name the entity, they get the entity to name itself. And by naming, they lose their power. That's exactly what happened that week. He was named as a child trafficker for the first time.
Mm.
As a complicit in a crime. And I was there, I was doing the ceremony and I wasn't touched. I was like,
Good on you.
They were walking by me like I wasn't there. And they normally grab anybody in the middle of St. Peter's Square doing a ceremony like that. So it's like there's all these things that happen. And I realized, yeah, we're not in Kansas anymore. You know, this is like we're operating in a higher level and we're protected that way. And I always say to people, you got to go through the fire of your own fear to find that higher power, right? But they keep you constrained within this fear bubble and you don't find it in yourself, right?
Right. Right. Yeah,
it's something.
You're a fascinating man.
Well, I learn it. You know, you learn these things, right? You got to learn from your own experience. That helps.
So, okay, let's try and figure out this this common law. So it's called common law. There's citizens assemblies. Is that right?
Yeah, common law assemblies we call them.
Okay, so how would I live in Toronto. It's a very big city. Mm-hmm. How would it start in a big city like Toronto? What would you do?
Is there one already?
Pardon me?
Is there one already?
There's been several attempts to try them, and it's harder to set them up in big cities because people are feeling really itemized, overwhelmed. Most of our support is in small towns, rural small town, you know. And so we keep trying. There's a whole network of people in and around Toronto who are doing this. But the first thing you do is you just call an information meeting, share the stuff, and if people are ready to go to the next stage, they sign a charter. And the charter says we're a legislature and a court, basically. We're a government in miniature. And we're existing to establish self-governance, which means you're outside the law of Canada. Mm-hmm. You're establishing your own jurisdiction. And then you link those up eventually into a republic. That's the idea, right? But that's the plan. But, of course, you're dealing with a lot of – I mean, you know, it's amazing. When you get people together these days, often they're in tears. They're saying, I feel so free here. I'm able to just be myself. I don't have to worry about watching everyone around me if I'm, you know. But then everyone has to vent. They've got to talk about everything, how they've been feeling. And it's really confusing unless you then get organized, you know, with an assembly, a steering committee. And just to let people know that we got to shift our thinking. It's not what they're going to do to us. It's now what we are going to do, period. Establish your own energy and stick to that. And, like, not once or twice, but we change our life. This is a new path for all of us, right? And we have to stick to it. So that's kind of the general plan. But this is an old tradition. I mean, it goes back, you know, 1,000 years in England and before that. I mean, you have remnants of that in America with the county sheriff system.
Right.
Where the county sheriff's accountable to the local people, not the feds. Right? And we invite police into our common law workshops. We do these workshops right away to train people So
would you think that a guy like me could go to my local sheriff's office and just sit down with him and say, come on, you see what's going on out there. This world is turned upside down. Can we do something about this together?
Exactly what you should do.
Okay. I'm going to.
Yeah, Todd will do it. Todd will do it too, but I don't know how I could do it in Toronto. What am I going to go do? Sit down with John Tory, the mayor
do it by yourself. Okay, first of all, don't ever do anything by yourself. Take witnesses. So take two or three people with you and just say, you know, and talk. We have several dozen contacts in Toronto waiting to be organized. So, you know, I can easily connect you with them. But for people listening, republicofcanada@gmail.com is the way you get us. No, it's exactly that kind of reaching out that's needed because they're people just like us and they've had a number done on their brain as well. So,
Right. No, that's a great idea about the sheriffs. I'm going to do that.
Well, the sheriff is one of the more powerful people in your county. He also, he controls the militia of the county. Let's be honest.
They can remove corrupt judges. They can convene courts. Sheriff has a lot of power in America. Traditionally, but that's what we're trying to revive. One of the positions we create in the assembly right away is a common law sheriff and deputies.
All right.
But so you say it's easier to do. So how would this? What small town is completely past those bylaws? Was it Park Hill and Qualicum? You said
Parksville, Qualicum, Victoria, British Columbia.
Victoria, the capital.
Oh, today, I'll tell you, I was just on the lawns of the legislature. We had a big picnic. We had the flag of Canada, flying. We're handing out flyers, including to the local cops, talking to them about it. We signed up about 10 new people. The local television was there filming us. So
and I can watch neat. That?
Yeah, it's on Check 6 TV tonight. I can send you the link. But
yeah, send me the link.
No, I mean, that's what you got to keep doing. And because you meet so many good people who are just out there, and they were saying, like, oh, I thought I was alone. I thought I was the only sane one left on the planet, right? This is great, you know. It's great meeting that. Keep thing going another 2 days to have an experience like that, right?
Well, we're hoping this interview carries you for the rest of the week, if possible.
Well, it will.
We're pretty excited. Amanda also mentioned, because I don't know this community of sovereign people, Ken Cousins of Gemstone University. Do you know who that is? And
no, but I'm sure there are a lot of people picking this up now and running with it, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I was just curious if there's other people doing things in parallel, and do you work with them? Because
here's the difference. Okay, here's the difference. A lot of people are doing good work and educating about common law and giving people individual responses like how to opt out of the system, how to return your ID, how to claim sovereignty. That's all good and necessary. But very few people are organizing on the ground an alternative. Mm-hmm. And an alternative in a community means these assemblies and courts. And that's what's going to harness the steam into a piston, because right now there's a lot of steam, but we don't have the system in place that's going to create an alternative for people. Because, you know, just because people go along with things doesn't mean they support it. It means they don't see anything else to join. And once you get an alternative, like we had in the 60s, a counterculture you could join, right? Mm-hmm. Like a different way of thinking and feeling and your own institutions, right? Your own co-ops or whatever, right? Then it'll take off. But if you're just talking ideas all the time and telling people what to do individually, you're not a force. You're a lot of separate
things.
You're not organized energy. You're not organized. And if we look at the people that are doing this to us as the enemy now, they're super organized. Like, that's what I was curious. If you start the Republic of Canada, we drive down the enemy's highways. How are we going to get to the Republic of Canada on their roads?
No, there are highways. We built them. We paid for them. We have to take that back in our mind, right?
Yeah, that's my problem with it. And I pay a lot of money to live in this house to the city for the privilege of living here. I pay huge taxes. Do I change the taxes over to the Republic of Canada? I mean,
well, one thing we did, we went to Goderich, Ontario, and the mayor was interested. We said, okay, first thing you do, keep tax money in the community. Don't pay the federal taxes, because most of that goes to pay off debts to foreign banks.
Right.
Most of the taxes are local or regional taxes that pay for essential services, schools, all that stuff. So keep the money in the communities. That's the first thing an assembly can do. And that gets a lot of people on board when you hear that, right?
So you mean the local business doesn't have to submit the HST?
No, boycott the feds. Totally. Boycott. It's crown jurisdiction. They've been found guilty under international law of genocide. They're a rogue body under international law ever since that conviction of the Queen. And
yeah, that. Can you tell me about that? Because that, people now talk off the cuff that the Queen has been convicted of child trafficking.
Well, people are recycling the stories from 2013 that came out in the course of the trial, 2012, 2013. A lot of that stuff was surfacing from eyewitnesses. Mm-hmm. One of the famous cases was the man, William Coombs, who saw her take 10 children out of the Kamloops Catholic School and never seen again. And that's one of the bases.
She personally led them out into her limousine or her chariot or whatever she travels in?
William was killed for this. He died soon after giving testimony about this in a hospital of what the nurse herself said was arsenic poison. We have that testimony from her. But they all took, it was October 10th, 1964. If you add up those numbers, they all equal 10. Mm-hmm. And it was 10 children who vanished. It was a definite cultic activity.
Yes, I study the numerology, so I know what you're saying.
Yeah, they were taken out to a place called Dead Man's Creek, and he saw them, 7 boys and 3 girls, go with her, and they're never seen again. Anyway, they were local kids, and nobody ever saw them again. And so, you know, we subpoenaed her. She didn't answer, and that's under the law, considered an admission of guilt when you don't defend your good name after you've been accused of something. Mm-hmm. It often leads to automatic conviction in courts when people do that.
Yeah.
So, you know,
It did when I didn't fight a parking ticket.
Right. Guilty. Well, yeah. That was the basis of her. I mean, she's a human being. Well, some people say she's not, but she's answerable under the law, even if she's not under her own laws. Common law, international law holds anyone.
Really?
You know, it's an old saying.
As a little pea on the pot, I just can't believe that. We can actually do that to the queen.
Yeah, you know why? Because you're raised, like all of us, to think that those in power are virtuous, good people and have our best interests at heart when it's the opposite.
I don't think that. It's just because she's on the money and she's on the wall of every school and every courtroom.
Of course, it's programming. But, I mean, the point is, there's an old saying in English common law, be you ever so high, you are not above the law. She's a human being and she can be tried for anything, including breaking somebody's window. You can try her as Elizabeth Windsor. And that's the basis on, and Joseph Ratzinger, we didn't name their titles. We named them as flesh and blood human beings. And they knew that. That's why they're still hiding out, because they know that an arrest warrant can be issued based on our conviction of them. That's the way it works. But you have to hide that knowledge from people because they don't know what power they actually have, right?
Mm-hmm. You have to literally hide the power that people have. And it's useless power unless it's organized. So I guess if you're on top, if you're running the show, you're going to keep people as disorganized as possible.
Well, and people keep themselves that way too. I mean, just the burden of surviving every day. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not used to looking beyond your own family and neighborhood. And so you leave. There's a really good book written in the 1830s, the best description of America I've ever read, called Democracy in America by a French nobleman called Alex de Tocqueville. And De Tocqueville said, America is going to be very prone to dictatorship because when everyone is concerned just about their own liberties in life, they leave government in the hands of a few because you're too busy with your own personal liberty to think about the collective and the body politic like Europeans do so much, right? And so they said he expected to see rampant dictatorships in America, ironically, even though they're the land of liberty, right? And there's no sense of responsibility to each other. It's all about... You see that on the highways in America, you know, people drive in the fast lane and they'll never pull over on principle in the fast lane, right? In Canada, they all automatically pull over to the right, right?
Do they really?
Oh, God,
well, we have a lot of left lane squatters here, so we're not so perfect. But I always thought that the COVID's revolution, I call it COVID's, the worldwide PSYOP, I thought its main purpose was to destroy America because America was purposefully created decentralized, so it's very hard to organize. And they keep rallying around the president, even though he really has super limited power compared to any Commonwealth country. Like you said that our phony astronaut, Julie Payette, the governor general, you say she has all the power. I think all the power is in the Privy Council. I believe, in the Langevin block, and there's three or four men that take their orders from the powers that be, the New World Order, the NGOs, the titans of industry. They tell the prime minister what to do. And
what you were saying, the individuals, I mean, Paul Desmarais, the Desmarais family who run Power Corporation, they've married into every political dynasty, including the Trudeau family, for the last 50, 100 years.
And that's, they marry in to keep the connection.
All the political parties, NDP, Liberal, Tory. I mean, the 3/4 of the laws passed in Canada are done through order in council, through the Privy Council, not through Parliament. It's a completely top-down system, which is why they're able to get away with a lot of this shit. So we have to create it for the first time. We have to create real direct democracy for the first time. And I think that's why it's catching on with so many people in Canada,
Now,
go ahead.
With technology now and Zoom meetings and everything, do you ever anticipate with those meetings that you have to where you might broadcast them? I mean, from Tampa, Florida, I would absolutely tune into that. Would be
Can't you have a meeting online so we can watch it?
Oh, okay. We can do stuff online. We're organizing that, but we do a blog show every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Oh,
that's a radio show.
Yeah, bbsradio.com/whowestand. It is radio. We're getting it broadcast. No, it's actually, there's a feeding system where it goes out to Facebook and all sorts of other links.
Right.
But, you know, I can send you all those links, but.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. And, again, that info is at Republic of Canada.
And I'll post those in the show notes after I get them.
Thank you.
Kevin, what did you think going back to the 80s of the Reform Party? Because that's when I really felt my political oats, back when Preston Manning, who I believe was a minister as well of some church, a parson or something, that was where Baptist. He got his roots. So he had that Baptist minister feel. He was sort of not a charismatic person, but he had a lot of principle and he was able to speak. What did you think when the Reform Party got some kind of power? I guess they were rechristened the Conservative Party. When it seemed for a brief couple of months, they were actually all speaking individually as MPs for their jurisdictions, where they were actually speaking out, and it became a real shit show because everyone has an opinion, and a lot of the opinions are not politically correct. A lot of opinions work in the rural areas, but they bounce right off Toronto because we're so progressive here and so liberal. What did you think of that period? Did you see?
Yeah, well,
what did you see?
Most of the movements for real change in Canada tend to come out of the West, because a lot of people there traditionally have been pissed off about the Eastern banks, the railways, the whole bit, right?
Yeah.
The political power in Canada is based on Ontario and Quebec in the East. Nobody else has any say, really, right?
That's
so
right.
There's a lot of disenchantment. And these traditions of left and right, they don't really mean a lot in practice, right? It's kind of a one-dimensional description of politics, and it's more like there's kind of the totalitarian and a liberation impulse in every political party and movement. And I look to the bottom, to the people across the political spectrum who have certain basic beliefs in liberty and common law and everything, right? But the Reform Party started okay, but like every other party, you get into parliament, you take an oath of allegiance to Queen Elizabeth and her descendants, period. Mm. Okay, so you're then an agent of a foreign power. You're not accountable to the people of Canada. And you're told what to do or you're out.
So the Reform Party was reformed by the very laws of Parliament. And so basically nothing can develop, because the minute you get this disorganized sort of raucous grassroots group, they get put through the sausage making machine and they come out sausages no matter what.
And that's why we say when you're creating a republic, power resides in the local common law assemblies. And they can opt out, right? That you have to have the principles of recallability, accountability. Mm-hmm. When you elect someone, it should be like a contract. We'll say, fine, you're in as long as you do X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And then
Z, as we see in Canada, right? And once you don't, boom, you're out. Why should we give you carte blanche to do whatever you want, especially when you're representing a foreign monarch and a criminally convicted one at that, right?
So, but this is my other thought. You know, when you are going along and you have a big anthill in your backyard and you kick it over, if you wait a few days, it almost always reforms exactly the way it was. So my question is, with the Republic of Canada, you guys are a bunch of really, motivated people. You want to see grassroots government, but over time, humans almost always reorganize into the most efficient dictatorship possible, because everyone slowly falls away and it reforms as the same thing that you were fighting against. How do
you stop
that?
You don't. It's a cycle of history. It happens that way. Mm-hmm. You believe in a permanent kind of change, a permanent rejuvenation. That's exactly what Jefferson said when he said, you've got to revive your institutions every generation or you'll get an empire, you'll get dictatorship. And, you know, don't forget that when people come together above a certain size, you will get hierarchy. I mean, you have to always decentralize. Right. I grew up around Hutterites in Manitoba, and in the Hutterite colonies, if you get above 125 people, boom, you split off and form a new colony, because they, in the assembly, everyone is equal and they all have a voice. You can't do that above a certain size. You have to.
And I think it's 125 people is the capacity for someone to truly know their names.
Exactly. And then you can know each other and you're accountable to each other. Above that, who's Joe Blow? Who's our representative? I don't know. You know, so smallness is essential for real direct democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And a republic recognizes that. And you know, there was that struggle in America to, you know, the Federalists versus the Republicans, right? Centralized versus state power. And I mean, it's an old issue, but I think you've got to expect things to go that way and always be prepared to rejuvenate ourselves personally and, mm-hmm. and around us, not be afraid of fundamental change, because that's mm-hmm. what keeps something living, right?
No, this is encouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, where do you see the what's happening now? Do you, because humans are so docile, or humans, the people of North America, the world, it seems, are so docile, they're so going along with this. How far are the rulers going to have to push things before people realize there's a really big problem? Because without the realization that the masks are wrong and there's just going to be another step. They just moved the goalposts. Mm-hmm. Where, how pushed against into the corner are people going to have to be like a raccoon before they just lash out?
Well, they already are. I mean, today, to give you an example, when we're on the lawns of the legislature in Victoria, we got no hostile reactions, including from people going by in masks. They were really interested mm-hmm. and they were listening, right? And they knew it was nonsense what they're doing, but they just don't, they're not used to thinking in terms that I can do something or okay. we can do something. Right. There's another part to this though, which is that we, remember I had my brother had, and I knew a lot of Vietnam vets in the '70s, and they talk about all the time about how the war has come home. That if you don't deal with a psychosis in your culture of violence and control and domination, it's going to blow back on you. We have done this genocide to lots of other people, and now it's blowing back on us. It's something that is inevitable. It's that law of return in history and nature that if you do something enough, it'll come back and hit you. So part of the defense against that is you accept what we did. You have to look at it and come to terms with it. And that's why the work I did led into this, and they're so complementary, because we've got to understand what was – how could we have done that? Like, that's something I never heard in all the talk of apology and residential school and healing and all this shit. I mean, they never ask the basic question, which is how could we have done this in the first place? Mm-hmm. And who are we to have done this? If we don't examine this, it's going to keep happening. It's like Gandhi said, if you don't have spiritual independence first from the British, you'll end up becoming like them. And when you get, even if you get political independence, and sure enough, look at India, right? I mean, it's the same. What you said, the anthill recreated, because we didn't do that inner, both as individuals and as groups, that inner catharsis, that shift that needs to happen. Like, you know, you got to go through a kind of death. And having worked a lot with people dying, I know, you know, all the stages of anger and denial, we're going through that as a culture. Yeah. Maybe that's what this COVID thing is. It's a huge form of denial and rage at the fact that, hey, we're dying. Okay. But it's good. We should let it die. So something else can be born.
Well,
right?
To continue the analogy,
yeah,
because I dealt with it in my backyard today,
yeah,
it was, instead of kicking that anthill cab, mm-hmm. I just went and got some Amdro and sprinkled it on top. It's kind of like giving them a vaccine.
You're poisoning
them. I'll kill them off. Yeah, I'm poisoning them. So maybe they're just, maybe they just consider us to be ants. And
oh, yes, they do.
Yeah.
That's their weakness, though. That's their weakness, because they don't understand us, and they don't understand they're part of us, right? They're the most estranged, messed up people in the world are those on top, because in a corporate system, it's the most sociopathic personality that gets to the top the quickest.
Hmm.
Churches,
oh, yeah.
Companies, governments, military, it's all the same.
The psychopaths.
And so when you have psychopaths running it, everyone feels they have to act psychopathically to please the boss, right? But they are very estranged themselves. They're like the little guy behind the mask in The Wizard of Oz. They're just little shits, right? And they're very mediocre individuals. And so what the hell are we afraid of, like, here? I mean, we can run morally and intellectually, we can run rings around these people. Mm-hmm. But they create a whole aura of power and invincibility and knowledge, which is just not true, right?
Yeah, well, the emperor definitely doesn't have any clothes with this virus. This virus hoax is just off the charts, contradictory. Yeah. It's ridiculous. It makes no sense. Now I'm becoming an expert on the germ/terrain theory, Pasteur versus Beauchamp, stuff I would never have talked about a few years ago. Since you're obviously very in touch with the natives, how should Canada deal with natives? Because no government knows what to do. So you're more of an expert now since you've obviously given up everything for on their behalf. What should Canada do with the native issue? They call it the native issue, but it's obviously well, the like native problem.
Yeah, like
really.
I said, we have to face ourselves first. You know, there should have been war crimes trials. There should have been, you know, natives often say to me, you know, we can't work with whites until they face themselves and face their own crimes, because we'd be crazy. They'd just do it. It's like the joke they always use is an apology from a Canadian for what happened is like a man who stole your car coming to the door, knocking on the door and saying, I'm really sorry I stole your car, and then getting in and driving away.
Yeah, right.
That's what an apology means from the people who did the crime and have never had to pay for it. So we have to face ourselves. We have to prosecute ourselves. That's what we've tried to do. That's what we did in these international, you know, courts that we set up into the genocide. But then we needed the kind of partnership that existed. Like the flag of Canada has three stars representing English, French, Indigenous founding nations. But then it's got these two blue lines. It's okay. Called the Touro Wampum Treaty, and it was signed originally by the British and the French and the Dutch with the Eastern Six Nations, Mohawk, Iroquois, all of them, right? Mm-hmm. And it said, we will share the land going like two ships down a river side by side.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't dominate each other. And if we're serious about getting back to that, you need a total overhaul. You've got to get rid of the whole crown system, all these agents of colonialism that are still in place, that caused the genocide and still doing this stuff. And show them we're serious about it. But you can only do that. I mean, the only reason I was trusted is they saw my life was destroyed. And they also knew they twigged into my own native ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
And my Scottish ancestors intermarrying with the Cree and the Ojibwe in Winnipeg. There was two indigenous, strong indigenous traditions there. You know, we got driven out of the Highlands and out of Ireland by the same empire. We understood that, but instead we kind of get on board with the empire and start doing it to other people. We've got to kind of realize that we had been subverted, you know. We've got to get back to our original indigenous roots ourselves. So that's all something that's happening, but it needs a name. It's got to have a direction and clarity about that, right? And that's another aspect of what I do when I give talks is talk about all that, right?
But when you say you have to prosecute yourselves, it's kind of like here in America with Black Lives Matter. There is this, you know, it's basically what I struggle with is how do I apologize for slavery? I've never owned a slave, you know, I've never bought one, sold one,
right.
You know.
What are you supposed to give up? What are you supposed to give? Do you have to give your half your house?
Okay, the argument is that we didn't do it personally, but we're living off the bales of gems.
Yeah.
We're living off
the proceeds of crime.
The proceeds. Okay, so fine. But I make the point with – I have a good friend in New York, Claudia Clark. She was very involved in the civil rights movement. And she said the only – well, Malcolm X made this comment. The only white man he would ever trust is John Brown, because he took up arms against his own people to free the slaves, right?
Mm.
And he said, well, you're Canada's John Brown, Kevin. You've done that. You've proven it. But I said to her, yeah, but Coley, the first slaves in America weren't black. They were street kids from London. They were white indentured servants brought over from England to work on the Virginia plantations. And they died at the same rate as blacks. Half of them were dead. But then they got pitted against each other. I mean, it's not a race thing.
Right.
The native chiefs are the biggest obstacle to this thing in Canada. Indians owned slaves. Even black people in the Caribbean owned other slaves. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember I was going to a CVS, a pharmacy down here, and it was in the height of all of the protests, and it was when it was just, they were burning down Minneapolis and everything. And there was a black gentleman on the corner that was, oh shoot, what's the word for it?
Reparations for slavery.
Yeah, reparations. And so I'm an inquisitive guy, so I just walked over to him and I said, so talk to me about this. What do you mean by reparations?
Yeah.
And he said, you gotta pay for slavery. And I said, so I said, well, you know, I've personally never bought or sold a slave, and I don't think you probably have either, right? But I said, I recognize that my ancestors did. So is that what you're getting at? Is that I recognize it. Now, let me ask you this question, sir. Do you realize that the people who sold those slaves in Africa to us, they were black? So I said, you need to apologize for that too. So I vote we shake hands and we're even. What do you think? And
Well, not only that, we might even have a leg up over them because who ended slavery?
Right.
A lot of white boys in uniform. A lot of white boys in blue uniform. Who ended slavery? A lot of 600,000 of our people died so slavery would end. So maybe that's reparation enough. I mean.
Right.
Where does it end?
Great point. It's a great point.
Yeah, but anyway, and you know, like the legal point of reparations is there's material reparation. And there's also moral reparation in courts of law. Moral reparation is when you take personal responsibility and you realize that money's not going to do anything. Because that whole thing of reparations, it's a lawyer's formula. They profit from it. And anytime people start talking about money, you can't compensate. You know, that's all they did in Canada. Oh, you saw your children killed and you got sterilized. And okay, here's $10,000. Now shut up.
Right.
And that's all they did. It was a way to protect the perpetrator and make money for the lawyers. And so forget about this talk of reparations. It doesn't do anything. It creates a false sense of justice, right?
So you're just saying we need a whole new system.
But you're saying that there is moral reparations that is legitimate then?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it realized we can't let this happen again. The only way you can pay back for all those kids who died and all those slaves worked to death is to say we will never let it happen again.
Right.
We're going to be a different kind of people.
Right. But you know what? It's happening every frickin' day. I mean, honestly, if I go downtown Tampa, I see spa, Asian spa, Asian spa, Asian spa.
Yeah.
And, you know, from what I understand, they bring these girls in and they take their passports.
Yeah.
And they're slaves.
So those.
Yeah, so it's happening all around
us.
So
you should stop getting your toenails done there, Todd.
Yeah, you have a neck crick every once in a while.
I'm sure you got a crick.
You should bite the bullet and not go there anymore.
Yeah, no.
Get a friend to do it.
Get your wife to rub your back. I mean, I know she's not as young as she used to be. Hey,
she's hot, Dad.
Are you, Kevin, are you related at all to Louis Riel? Because you said you had some Métis. That's the one thing I remembered, the rebellion of 1879 in Manitoba.
There were two, the Riel rebellion, 1886.
Okay.
The railway was going through, so they needed to get them off the line quick.
Right.
The Indian Act and everything in. Linking to Canada East and West, because America was going to try to grab the whole West Coast.
We were racing.
So they had to get out there quick. Right. It was a struggle for that part of the world, but, no, not directly to Riel, but my great-great-great-grandfather on my father's side took part in our 1776, the 1837 rebellion in the East, which got defeated and their leaders hanged. And that's why we had all the problems after, because the crown and the church took over absolute power after that. There was no...
The partnership ended.
Yeah.
Whatever partnership there was. What should Canada do with the natives? Should we dissolve... Reserves?
Reservations are against the law, international law. It's based on race-based legislation, which was done away with after World War II. You're not allowed to have an Indian Act. I mean, do you have an Irish Act? Do you have an Italian Act?
Mm-hmm.
That's not allowed in any system of law because it's targeting people.
Right.
You know, this Indian Act, you can't even renovate your home on a reservation without permission. It's like what's being imposed now on everybody. The reservation system. We're living in one big reservation now. That's what their plan is. And so when you say how, it's really a question of not so much what are we going to do for Indians, but for all of us.
It sounds to me like we all need to be, isn't the thing on an Indian reservation, they're all alcoholics?
Well, that's the result of, I'm surprised anyone's alive after what happened in these death camps, residential school death camps, but it's intergenerational dependency and like, when I started in Port Alberni, with all the Native families I knew, there was only one that weren't drinking, doing drugs, raping each other.
Whoa.
You know, it was horrible. And the one family that didn't go along with that stuff were isolated and ostracized.
Right.
They said, oh, you know, too good for us, eh? Like,
wow.
You
know,
you're not participating, yeah. Hmm.
You know the old, there's a cartoon, two cartoons, and it shows, one's entitled Colonialism, and it shows a white man with a gun to a black man's head. And then it's called Neocolonialism and shows a black man holding a gun to his own head. And that's the system that Native people now are doing it to themselves the way we do it to ourselves.
With right.
Lining up and putting the muzzles on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And now we're at the point where we're sending our kids back to school. Oh. And I'm grateful that my daughter is 17 and she's not, you know, she's wearing a mask. I coach her on how she doesn't have to wear a mask, but she insists, you know, because
she wants to get along.
She doesn't have my personality. And but man, if I had a little one that I was sending that's eight years old or whatever, I'd be out of my frickin' mind right now. It's just child abuse.
Yeah, we've even got groups in our assemblies formed that work just on that issue. We set up homeschooling networks, support, really educating the kids, because you know the pressure is you want to see your friends again, right?
Sure.
But I
make new friends,
right? New networks,
new like friends in Canada,
right?
Yeah.
Well, Canada's everywhere.
It's 9:30. You have graced us with an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
We really appreciate it. And me coming into this not knowing hardly anything at all about you, I'm now fascinated. I look forward to getting a bunch of links from you, and we'll definitely keep track and hopefully keep in touch.
It's been great. I thank both of you. And I've written 17 books. They're all, if you go to, unfortunately, they're on Amazon. I don't have any other outlet right now. But put in Kevin Annett in Amazon, you see all my books.
Yeah.
I've run biographical books and training manuals and all this stuff.
Okay.
And the main work, murderbydecree.com.
Yeah, I got that right here. Yep.
And republicofcanada.ca, those are the two sites. And then the radio show, which I'll send you.
Yeah,
I listened to the last three of your radio shows. They're very interesting. You're now on my rotation of podcasts, rather, and you had some interesting guests, and I would like to talk to people in my area. That would be fantastic.
I'll connect you to the Toronto organizers. Thank you.
That would be very interesting, and I'll promote it. I'm very confused by it because I just don't understand my power, because I suppose I've never been told about it. If you don't know about something, you don't know you're missing it, really.
Well, it's like a muscle you don't use. You just got to start exercising it.
Are you saying, Ab, and I heard this as an ad hom for the first time today, so if you guys have heard this a bunch of times, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But if brains were taxed, you'd get a refund. Is that what you're saying, Ab?
A little bit. And should I – I'm going to watch Unrepentant. I just started watching it because it's amazing so far what I've seen. What's the youngest a child can be to watch that movie to give them
I'd
a real
be careful.
History?
I mean, you know, there's people describing sterilizations and electric shocks to penises and, you know, being nails driven through tongues. I mean, so you got to be, Jesus. I mean, tortures they personally experienced, showing the scars, right? I mean, all of that. So, you know, I'd go easy. Even adults, they can't watch the whole thing. They have to take in bits.
Wait, did you find that, Ab, on YouTube or?
No, it's bottom of my email.
Yeah.
There's no link.
And YouTube has allowed it to stay on because YouTube is censoring everything in sight now. So,
well, they might now, but it's been around for quite a while since 2007.
So. Well, you know, Abba, YouTube still has, or do they? No, maybe not. Do they still have September Clues?
Well, it goes up and down. Yeah, September Clues, in case you don't know, Kevin, is sort of the penultimate movie on 9/11 that basically explains what happened. If you want to watch a good movie that came out at about the same time yours did, take a look at that if you want to really decode. But thank you very much. Very, very interesting. You're a fascinating person and obviously a very brave person.
Well, again, like, it's a stubbornness, half of a stubbornness. Like, I'm not, you know, I had a choice. I could go along and roll over or just say, no, this is not going to happen, guys. It's like, I owe it to my kids, to me, to all those other children, right? It's that simple.
What do your children think of you now? I assume they're older.
They're 31 and 28. And
have they reconciled with their father?
there was no estrangement, really,
okay.
because they
good.
Was they knew we had that heart connection. They knew exactly what I was going through, but they don't like thinking bad about their mom. They don't like thinking bad sure. about Canada, right?
Right.
So they take me. They just
yeah.
Like a lot of us just segregated, right? Segregate. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's I don't know. You know the old saying, "Love conquers all."
What? Yeah.
Do they believe? So. Do they mask up?
Not as far as I know.
Yeah, because you know, this is a
independent thinking. Yeah,
this is a huge divider. This is the new divide: mask, no mask. It's forget left
well,
and
know.
Right.
I mean, they both know it's bullshit. But I mean,
yeah, right.
You know,
I don't know. I don't know if they all know it's bullshit because I've been trying. And man, when I start talking to people, like, you haven't worked this out yet, have you? That this
no,
you know, the boogie virus doesn't exist. Yeah. But you know, and then they're just. People just can't believe it. They're just so, you know, they're just under a spell. That's the way I put it. They're just under
I think that's true. It's worth another discussion. I think there's a whole kind of spiritual dimension to this that hasn't been talked about, but I think it's definitely those influences are at work.
Yeah.
Does that mean we can have you back?
Absolutely. Anytime you guys want, I'll be
back.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Oh, you're amazing. Okay.
We'll take you up on that, I promise.
All right. Thank you.
Send me the link. Send me the link, too. I'd like to share it.
To you this bet. Broadcast? Absolutely.
And what I'll do is I'll send it to you tomorrow because it takes like 24 hours for YouTube to do its thing where it will appear in studio. Then I can go in and edit it a bit.
I'll send you the audio file because I do the audio. He does the video because he's got the face. Yeah, so I'll shoot this out to you maybe in the morning if I have time.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All right,
okay,
fantastic. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, all the best. Bye-bye.
All right, see you later.
Bye.